Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Bezant Resources. Welcome back to the podcast, Colin. How's things?
I'm good, thank you. Very good. In London. Nice sunny weather, so lots of things happening around us and the companies and what have you. It changed. I don't know. It's been a funny day today. It kicked off raining, but it's ended up sunshine in more ways than one.
Yeah. Very good. Sounds good, Colin. So, I mean, obviously, we saw the news following a major milestone for the company, the granting of a full 15-year mining license for the Hope and Gorab Copper Gold Project in Namibia. This marks a significant step forward in transitioning from exploration to development, unlocking the potential of one of Southern Africa's most promising near-term copper assets. Tell us more about this news, please, Colin.
Well, it's the kind of the news that we were expecting, of course, and waiting for, and we thank the government for giving it to us. It just completes the jigsaw, many components. As you know, there was some time ago we was issued with a letter with an intent to issue a license. So, you know, at that stage we were comfortable that the license would come along, the full operational permissions, if you like. However, they wanted the environmental license in place. We announced that some months ago. And this completes the jigsaw where essentially we're free, we're operational, we've got 15 years, you know. Obviously, we've got to show action in less than 15 years. So it's a 15-year mine license to grant it to the company to get on with the operation.
Absolutely, yeah. So just talk us through the next steps. You know, how ready is the project for development? You know, is there any existing infrastructure in place? Or, you know, will it require significant build-out from this point?
We've got access to a plant. So building a plant is not going to be the long lead that it would have been. We have contractors both for transport and for the digging, letters of intent and agreements in place on cost, duration, escalations. These pits are very simple, by the way. You know, the pits that we intend to operate, and we intend to operate two at any one time. And the equipment fleet should be able to move between the pits. I mean, really, it needs a drilling machine, couple of 30-ton trucks, water bows, and of course, I guess we're in the desert there to keep the dust down, and an excavator. So, you know, this will be contract operators by a company. I don't think it's appropriate that we named a company, but they've been talking for some time, and they're very happy, and we're very happy, and it will be their Namibian office, their Namibian company, which will be doing the operation. They're a South African company with Namibian operations. That's in place. We've done extensive trials, as you know, at the start of the year with the ore sorter. There was some discomfort on whether or not it would size up from the laboratory to the actual. And so in-house, we decided, well, look, you know, it is key, it is critical. So let's do a full-scale test. That gave us no shocks and plenty of pleasant surprises. The biggest being the fact that we were advised by Steinhardt, the providers of the equipment, the ore sorting would probably work best with the material plus 19 millimeter. So we screened out the minus 19, and lo and behold, that was full of chalcocite, which was very, very good news, and was over 3% minus 19 material without seeing an ore sorter. That could have been very bad news and good as well, because obviously you can't have it both ways. So by taking the high grade out, the material which was introduced to the Steinhardt ore sorter was of a much lower grade. Pleased to say that we were able to upgrade that by some four times. So that really, when it comes to ore sorting, job done. Done at full level and done over a big size range. And some, we got good recoveries. There was some copper reporting to the waste. And so we've done some trials since, and we can get that too. So we're very, very pleased. And that's, we're working on the density side of ore sorting. So we're very, very pleased with the outcome. More pleased than, you know, a better result than we expected.
Yeah, sure.
And better in the laboratory. So that's sorted. And so really we're ready. We can be providing a product to in excess of 3% to the for the plant. We will produce between 7,000-8,000 tons of copper. We obviously, Walvis Bay isn't very far away. As you all know, there's absolutely no problems now finding somebody to buy your concentrate. They're just looking around all over the place to get concentrate. The big problem in the world now is to get concentrate. Double whammy in our favor is the fact that it's an extremely clean concentrate. in terms of contaminants, there aren't any. And we probably be screening out a magnetite and all sort of and magnetic separators. So we'll have another commercial project to sell too. So when you look at it, copper's on the up, gold is certainly on the up, and silver is on the up. So all three components are on the up, and we're looking at a mining grade of about 1.7%, which is pretty healthy, isn't it, when you think about it?
Very common, in fact, copper equivalent.
Yeah, that's the copper equivalent, yeah. So we're ready to put all things in place, ready to award contracts. And the ore sorters will be powered by, and the government are very pleased with us for this, will be powered by solar energy. We've got a letter of intent to install a solar energy plant. They will, the capital cost is not for us, it's for the company who supplies. We will have to give them a minimum of a 10-year contract in order to, you know, buy the power off them. So that's a great saver. And we needn't wait for that bank. I'm assuming that hopefully that it will be installed before we're ready for the off. But if it isn't, we can still work on generators, since these ore sorters are very, very low on consumption of electricity in any event. So really, when you look at it, it's full circle now, isn't it? And we can't wait to get going.
Well, this is basically it, isn't it? I mean, we've talked in the small cap world before that how just continually drilling, the market hasn't rewarded larger and larger resources. It rewards revenue and sales, right?
And governments are the same, you know. We were told in no uncertain terms a few years ago when we first went into Namibia, another explorer is not required. We'd like a developer and a producer.
100%, because realistically, the government, you know, does take some tax off you when you produce a concentrate and sell it, and then it uses that tax to improve the country. With respect to many of these countries, it doesn't matter how much copper you've got in the ground. What matters is how much you can get out each year and sell, right?
Yeah, and then there's the jobs, of course, where, you know, in the Swakopmund and Hervey's Bay area.
Yeah, of course.
You know, there's not a lot of jobs and created here, so that makes everybody happy. Job creation. It's only a small country, and they don't want an employment of any sort. So you've got a lot going for them, but they're still very happy about the job situation.
Mm,
and obviously, there's foreign exchange and all those good things.
Well, hence why you're getting the mining licenses. They want you to get cracking. I guess in terms of financing this thing, I mean, we've talked about the numbers before very broadly. But I mean, it's interesting to note the Blackstone Minerals position. I mean, in US dollars, what, 8 million at the current exchange rates?
Yeah, I mean, the share price is a wee bit, well, it's not that volatile. But I mean, since we first agreed to sell our shares, IDM to sell their shares into Blackstone, the share price has gone up considerably. It's been as high as 0.98. I think it's currently 0.86. The deal completed last Wednesday, I think it was. So you'd expect some selling straight after the reverse was complete. I mean, it's running at about 86 and then at 0.86. I think at that level, we're good for about £5.9 million, $8 million, that order, $8 million US dollars. We should be talking about Australian dollars. So if it's, let's call about £5.9 million, and what's that market cap, Kevin, for 4.2?
I think market cap is around 4 to 4.5 million, depending on what day you think it is.
It's up and down. Let's call it 4.5. So it's an healthy premium, 1.5 healthy premium to the current share price, to the current market capitalization with a project. And Charles has produced, I'm not allowed to, we've been through this before.
Yeah, we've had this conversation many times.
I'm not allowed to make any forecast. I'm not allowed to make any time forecast. I'm not allowed to make forward-looking statements of that sort.
Okay. But I'll say them for you.
Was quite able to do the math, and quite able to do the math. So if we look at paybacks, if we look at what we've got in the bank, our options have certainly improved dramatically with that Mankind disposal.
Yeah, well, I'll just say, you know, just from the open pit alone, we don't need to talk about the extensions, etc. We were looking at sort of 30 million ish. That was what we were talking about last year when I calculated it. But since then, the metals have gone up so much in value, you're talking more like 50 million. And I know you can't comment on those numbers, Colin, but to me, if the capital cost of getting this thing up and running is well south of $20 million, you're laughing, right?
Yeah. And of course, the open pit, the open pit has got lots of promise, because I've alluded to on these podcasts we've had the fact that most of the drilling, the 69,000 metres, by the way, but 17 kilometres between open garage, has been subjected to 69,000 metres of drilling. And in their wisdom in the 70s, it was decided that, oh, well, look, everything above 150 meters will be oxidized. And in those days, they just could not handle oxidized material. So the directors in those days said, look, you know, drill below 150. It's no good finding something and no use to us at all. If it if it does contain copper, there'll be oxides probably all the way to surface, which was a profound mistake. First of all, there weren't oxides to surface. There were sulfides all the way to surface. Both Kevin and Phil have been out there and seen it. They've stood on it. They've stood on those oxides.
Yeah, we've kicked those rocks.
Yeah.
So I had them back and put them in my office, actually, so they're going greener by the day.
You're stealing from shareholders right there, Kev.
Outrageous. I'm sorry.
I want those rocks back.
When we go back to Namibia, money. I'll bring them back with me.
Wonderful. Yeah.
When you were trying to explain it to customs,
we were looking around for those, Kevin. I'm glad you've admitted to it.
Those particular rocks are very special.
Yeah,
and can I ask you? Okay, let's say obviously a lot of the financing is sorted just by that dint of the Blackstone shares, whether you choose to sell them or just borrow against them potentially. But say we get the financing in place, how quickly can we get Hope and Gorob up and running and producing from where it is now, which is effectively, from zero?
This is a bit of a no-no again. I know I'm not, but the FCA and the AIM team are very, very, very insistent that company directors or management or giving podcasts should not make it look forward-looking statements either in terms of profitability or time to get into profit. So I'd love to answer the question and take you through how I see it. But let's step off it and look. What are we looking at here? We're not talking about sinking shafts, are we? Mm-hmm. Which obviously, we've got a time constraint. You can't have 20 blasts a day. You're limited to how many blasts. So you certainly, an open pit, for example, can produce 5,000 ton a day. It can produce 10 or 15,000 ton a day. We've discussed the sulfides going to surface, so we're not going to have a big pre-strip, i.e. take the cap off the ore body. No. The ore body, you stand on it, surface. So none of those things apply, and all of those things are, for the statement, correlate with time. If you've got a pre-strip, which has got no grade in it, or little grade, which is sub-economic, that means it's cash deficit funding whilst you do it. And secondly, you've got the time of doing it. So that's disappeared. That's one of the key elements of a typical open cast operation. That's gone. We said we've got a plant, access to a plant, so we ain't got to build a plant. That's gone. Ore sorters are available in the world. Steinhardt have got ore sorters, and we've done all our test work with them.
So that's not
a cardinal risk, and that's putting the thing in place. And the screens can be mobile if necessary, but they won't be. We'll put a permanent screening operation and crushing operation. But this equipment is not exactly rocket science, is it?
So if you can't say that, then I can extrapolate potentially from your next answer myself. In terms of the flow sheet, is it just simply blast, crush, sort, and then that's it? And then we send it off.
It's blast. Yes, that's right. It's blast. Then get it out of the pit. Well, blast, pick up, get it out of the pit, and put it, crush it to the appropriate size, minus 19. Put the plus 19 through the ore sorter.
Yeah.
Stockpile the rest. Because it's mine, you don't want to deliver too many fines, so put some of that into every truck what leaves.
You don't
want
to annoy
it. Then you took it to the plant, process it, and produce a flotation concentrate. Take it to Walvis Bay and put it on a boat to wherever it's going, to the offtaker.
Okay, well, let's put it a different way. Are there many simpler mines to build from scratch in the world, or is this one of the simplest jobs that you would say?
I always liken it to chrome mine. The wall, the slopes are, it's not going to be a deep mine, and seldom is it going to be much deeper than 130, because you've got to leave a crown pillar between the underground workings. And so it's a very shallow pit, easy access. Quartz and amphibolite is on your margins, if you like, so very hard boundaries to the ore body. So it's not as though you've got something what's going to be sloughing and collapsing. You've got very, very good boundaries and very good interfaces between ore and waste. And then the ore is very apparent. Again, Kevin, you can support that. You've seen it, that it really lick out this ore does. So grade control is not going to be a nightmare either.
This is the only one I've got left. Is that, let's say you finance it, you're up, you're producing. Let's say it's this time next year. I'm not putting those words in your mouth. It could be longer. what do you want to do with this project thereafter when you've got the free cash flow to do pretty much whatever you want, assuming all goes to plan?
This project is our starter for 10, because I think on a regular basis on these podcasts, I emphasize the 17 kilometers between Hope and Gorup. I emphasize that 69,000 meters of drilling have been conducted. If one stands on top of this saddle, which is called Hope, and looks in the direction of Gorup, you can actually see things jutting out. It's actually resembles the ore body resembles a ship, which would bury in the desert, if you like, and those little bits sticking out are each side of the ship, and the keel is down right there, is maybe down 170, 200, 250. God only knows where the keel is, and there's a plunge to it as well. So we're going to climb into that, and whilst we've got about 260, 270,000 tons of copper now, the idea in the next year, year and a half, is to take that number up to 750 or even a million, and this could be a tier one, because you will have appreciated from previous announcements that we don't stop at 17. We've got contiguous licenses on the Matchless Copper Belt, which takes us to even 60 kilometers of continuous matchless strike. And one of those, well, there's one very distinct anomaly which can be equally as good as the 17 as the one we're working on at the moment. Been quite a lot of work on it. Extremely good geophysics. And one would have forgotten that about 4 years, 3 years ago, we announced that we'd flown it. So we've discovered quite a few significant anomalies as well, which are north of the existing 17 kilometers. So I'm very bullish on an exploration program which puts it in the top division. So then our choices are quite simple. If we can produce 500,000 ounces, 500,000 tons of contained copper, then the obvious thing to do is build a bigger plant close to Walvis Bay, because it's all about water. The biggest a plant which can do 25,000 tons on the way to Walvis Bay. And that's a meaningful operation. That's a very big operation. That's a nice operation. To prove up the underlying tonnage to support the capital, I don't think it'll take much more than a year and a half to 2 years. And then do we build that plant, or do we let others build that plant and either dilute to much bigger money? Do we have something to sell? So
So,
the
Colin, I'm going to ask you the question: is this going to be bigger than your other sale that you did a number of years ago?
That was massive, That was, let's face it, that was 1.5 million tons of 0.59% copper. This is a different animal, because that one was very low grade, 0.59. This is a different animal. We're in a different world. So again, it'd be fairly speculative to say whether we sell it, whether we joint venture to let some more money in come to build all our facilities and infrastructure, or whether we've generated enough cash flow to do everything ourselves. So those imponderables remain, but it's got all the makings, to answer your question, of a big tier one project.
You dodged that question very well. Well done. If somebody came to you now and said, and so you didn't have to bother doing it yourself, I mean, just so people have an idea, a project like this with only the open pit and then the potential for the 190,000 or 260,000 tons of contained copper in the current climate of 10,000 copper, what is the project worth now that you have a 15-year license in your hand?
Well, once again, if I start giving numbers, people can work ratios, multiples of, and I'd be actually indicating what the annual cash flow would be. So I've got to answer the question more generally than it's a specific question, which I'm going to answer generally. And of course, what a project's worth is what somebody's prepared to pay for it. And
Absolutely, yeah.
the only people at the moment who are in the market, really in the market, are the Chinese, which baffles me. Of course, there's the world's going to be short of copper, and the Chinese seem to be conquering Africa, and wherever there's a copper mine anywhere near ready, they're very, very quick and very anxious to get in there. So what's it worth? Would we sell? I'd be very doubtful for us to sell, but I'm always for risk sharing, and so some equity against some money might be considered. But all options are on the table, Kevin. The fact is, as you say, it's worth a lot more today than it was yesterday, because it's got a mining license, it's fully permitted. Today it was hope, today it's reality, you can say all of those things.
Yeah, I'll ask Charles a question then. Charles, 190,000 tons of contained copper, 1.7% copper equivalent. What is the in-ground value of that copper?
A lot. I mean, if you can put it for a calculator and say millions and millions and millions,
It's
But
billions, it's not millions.
well, I think the bigger thing is you have to build the plant, get it out, and then in my mind anyway, the first truck that you send off from port, that money becomes real, and then you can talk about it. Up until then, it's theoretical.
Yeah, agreed.
Or actually, maybe when the second you get financing for it, which I think must be very close now. I was more interested actually, because I went on a half marathon run earlier today in my effort to get back in shape. You were talking 60 kilometers of strike across the Matchless Copper Belt. That's basically running a marathon and then another half marathon on top.
That's great. That's a
So
lot of
I,
that's a hell of a lot of Matchless Copperbelt.
well, anyone who's ever done that, right, ever run a marathon in their life, will know how hard that is. So it's just the volume of potential copper there that you haven't even touched
That's
is
right.
more
And you know,
exciting
I
to
mean,
me.
obviously don't be totally mineralized, but we know there's going to be pods, and they're not pods in the normal sense of pods. These are significant anomalies which have been partially tested. We can't get to the data, but Anglo were very keen on them. But you know, we talk about this mine, but our shareholders and anyone listening to this podcast would do what you've just done, Charles. Sit by and say, well, and I use the words I think that were probably appropriate. This is our starter for 10. So if we can get significant cash flow, divert that cash flow into exploration, build up a big resource which can sustain a 20 to 25,000 ton a year copper operation, we've served our shareholders well. Likewise, if we go there and use the some capital to drill and prove up a very large resource which can support a 25,000 year mine, I'm sure in the at the end of 2026 or middle of 2027, there's going to be buyers galore who would want to see the sort of deposit which ranges from, I don't know, not less than 5 up to 1 million tons of contained copper. Because you know, if you multiply start multiplying in 1 million tons of copper by 10,000, you get into some really, really big numbers.
And I guess the other thing is, and I keep having last questions, but new ones come to me. If you're if you get this mine up and running, you get the free cash flow going. And Namibia is a wonderful location in terms of jurisdiction, especially compared to plenty of African countries, neighbors nearby. There's every other license in the country. There's hundreds of licenses close by. You have the cash to explore all of them by that point. Well, maybe not all of them, but significantly more. And presumably there's plenty of licenses out there that you wish you'd always gone to, but maybe never quite had the money to do it with.
Namibia is blessed with large and medium scale mines. It's got an history, you know, of being really big mining territory. A lot of the majors were in the old days, and the juniors never delivered, and the juniors never went through from exploration into production. So we're somewhat unique in that direction. So your comment is absolutely right. Namibia is very open-ended, very supportive of new production. A little tired of explorers. They want to see, you know, they want to see less exploration and more development. And so we're very pleased that they've acknowledged that we're serious and we want to develop and start mines. So yes, Namibia is a good jurisdiction, very well placed, like any country in the world, would welcome the jobs. And we've committed both to develop the mine and to embark upon training, development of local personnel and all those things which go to make a stronger economy in terms of the natural resource space.
So wonderful. Right.
Okay.
Well, congratulations, Colin, and yeah, let's get our mind built.
Let's get the mine built. No, there's not a lot more to say than that, is there? Let's get the mine built upwards and onwards.
Absolutely. On that note, we'll say Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Bezant Resources. Thanks very much for appearing on the podcast again.
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks, all three of you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.